the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Friday, July 12th, and we are underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Steinberg along with you, and it's time for the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday. After a one-week hiatus, the Eric Francis Hour returns, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live, Standardbred Racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. We say hello to Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. We call him Mr. 25, but the push for 26 did not go answered at our Stampede party on Thursday. That's okay. We love Eric Francis nonetheless. Hello, EF. How we doing, buddy?
Fantastic, my friend. How are you? It was good to see you last night at the local watering hole.
It was good to see you as well. Even though, again, you know, the run for 26, he didn't even take a run at it.
Oh, I'm much more mature than I was last year.
That's fair.
My wife would probably disagree, but there was no need for that sort of silliness. It was a fun night.
Did you end up racing anybody?
No, that's another thing that that's a lifelong. Whenever I'm, you know, out there enjoying myself, I often feel like flexing as the fastest person I know. And I did challenge. I challenged a young lady to a 100-meter dash. But if I'm being fair with myself, she was drinking out of a boot seconds before I challenged her. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think I was picking. It wasn't fair that I was, like, egging her onto a fight, because I think she didn't have all her faculties there. If you're drinking out of a boot, you're not thinking clearly, is the way I look at it. Or else it's just Stampede, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, or a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Well,
sure.
It was lovely to see you. It sounds like your voice is about as fresh and in tip-top shape as mine is. So, hey, that's Stampede for you.
Well, how many people in our city right now have a full voice?
That is, like, also true.
If anybody's done any amount of stampeding, you know, you're playing hurt right now, and that's okay. That's part of being a Calgarian. And if your voice is raspy, I'm proud of you.
We got lots to talk about. It's our final Eric Francis Hour with you and me until sometime in August. Flames Talk goes on hiatus after this hour of the program for a four week stretch. And so want to wrap it up. Some big picture talk, and I also want to kick off this hour by getting into a conversation that your buddy Wes and I ended up having this conversation kind of out of nowhere on Wednesday of this week. It kind of just came up. We were having a conversation about one thing, and then it turned into another. The text line really got into it, and I thought, as we were talking, I'm like, well, this absolutely has got to get on the Eric Francis Hour this week as well. And the conversation was about Zane Parekh, and whether or not you would play him in the NHL this year as a junior hockey player being drafted out of OHL Saginaw. He is subject to the 9-game rule, which allows a player to get 9 games in the NHL without tolling the first year of his entry-level deal, which he has signed that last week as the Flames are going through development camp. And kind of the different philosophies of where or how you should use that 9-game rule with a guy like Parekh. I'll give you my take in a second, but Francis, I'm curious as to just your overall feel on the player and your kind of thoughts of him joining the organization. Because for me, it feels like for the first time in 8 years, when they drafted Matthew Tkachuk out of OHL London, that it feels like they've got a potential franchise player that they've drafted here, and a guy that you could say, yeah, that's one of your guys that you build around. That's one of your signposts that you build around and one of your future core players, at least if it all goes according to plan. What's your feel on Parekh as he joins the organization and as he was their first pick in the most important draft in years?
Yeah, I mean, he's a project. I mean, I really believe that. I know a lot of people wouldn't say that. I mean, certain players in the deeper rounds, you say he's a project because he's got to work on his skating or he's got to do that. He still has to learn how to play the defensive side of the puck in a big, big way. And he's the first to admit that. You know, he's pretty confident that he made big strides this year, but he's a pretty confident kid, period, right? I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Which I love.
Yeah, he's very... He's positive. He's ready to go. And I always say this, like drafting a defenseman in the first round is about as unsexy as you can, you know, usually it's just like, oh God, like we had to do it, but we found this guy. He's got size. He's got some hands, but this is different. This is so much sexier than any of the other defensemen to me that went in the first round. And they are all really talented. And there's a reason why they're rated in the top 10, but this guy brings that added dimension that, well, quite frankly, has never been seen before in the OHL. I mean, he breaks that record.
Yep.
With 33 goals in one season. You know what's almost as impressive to me is that is when he was 16, like his previous year, he set the record for 21 goals. As a raw rookie in the Ontario Hockey League, 21 goals. Like, that's unheard of right there, too. So there's a natural talent there that's undeniable. There's a skill set that's very unique. And yes, he's a very, very sexy prospect in which you do want to start building your franchise around. I get that. So with that said, the fact that I do believe he's got huge strides to make defensively, and that's not just, I'm not ripping into him, but by talking to scouts and people in the organization, like, it's a fact. It's just everybody knows that. If you put that much offense up, there's probably something in your game that's missing a little bit. So that's going to take time. And to me, that's going to take 2 or 3 years to get into the NHL level of defensive play. They say some defensemen take till they're 25, 26 to start really figuring out how to play on the defensive side of the puck. So I'm not saying it's going to take that long. He's a smart guy. That's pretty well documented. He's a hard worker. So to your question, should they give him the 9 games? I think you go in with a completely blank slate and you say, show us that you deserve 9 games. Show us that you deserve 5 games. Show us that we should keep you past the first week of camp. Like, and it's not like, hey, we don't believe you can do this. It's just, let's just see what we have here and let this thing grow organically. I don't see why you'd put any sort of limits or parameters on him and say, well, we definitely are not going to let him play in the NHL this year. No, chances are 95%. And you tell me if that's a gross overstatement. But
sure.
Chances are 95% this kid is not playing in the NHL this year, certainly past the 9-game mark, right? We both agree with that. It doesn't really make sense to even think
he
could play on this team this year.
Yes, my feel was more just give him the go into training camp with a really open, optimistic mind about giving him those 9 games. Because I think there is so much potential benefit of giving him a taste and then sending him back to Saginaw if it goes the way that you and I and many others would think it would go. If him playing in the NHL as an 18-year-old defenseman with a lot of things that he needs to improve in his game, if it goes the way that we expect it to, then yeah, you probably don't keep him for more than those 9 games. But keep him, get him 6 or 8 or the full 9 or whatever. Let him get that taste and send him back to the Ontario League and have that propel him to an even better season potentially. And I just feel like there's a lot of benefit in doing that and giving him an idea is, okay, that's what playing against Connor McDavid is like. There's a real taste. So you can see it on TV. You can talk about all you want about giving him time and space or not giving him time and space and all that type of stuff. But until you're on the ice with 97, you don't know. And, hey, there's a game against the Oilers pretty early on this season. And maybe that's a good way to give you a little indoctrination into what the league is all about. And you take that as a little bit of motivation going back to the Ontario League season, knowing what you need to work on to better your game. I just think there's a lot of sense to it, and I wouldn't say that about 99% of other prospects in the organization, but with this one, with his attitude, and I say that in a good way, with his really eager and confident attitude, but also knowing that he needs to get better in certain areas, I just think there's a lot of benefit in doing it, Eric. And I almost feel like going to training camp, asking him to play himself out of that opportunity. Like,
sure,
make it so that you have to prove that you don't deserve those 9 games, as opposed to you have got to knock our socks off to get that 9 games. And that is not usually how I'd think, but I think so highly of this pick that it's turned my brain on its side a little bit.
Yeah, I think you go in and you say, look, we'd really like to give you these 9 games. And you know, you talk to him, and we've all talked to him, and heard him say, like, my goal is to make the team this year, like, for the whole year.
Yep.
But then he's also pretty quick to say, yeah, I get it, that's probably not going to happen, but that has to be my mindset. Okay, every guy's got to say that. I get it. But I think you go in and say, we would like you to play the 9 games, but if we see warning signs or see things in the exhibition season that make us believe that this could be detrimental to you, then we're not going to put you in that position. And listen, I think you can get a pretty good taste of the speed and the size of the NHL, even in the exhibition series or exhibition season. No, maybe not game 1 and 2, but by game 6, 7, 8, I think that you're playing against pretty much NHL lineups at that point. And I know that the games aren't on the line, but you still get that speed and size issues that you're learning from. So I think we would both agree to this. Semantics aside, however you decide, like, you know, we'd really like you to play 9, or we're expecting you to play 9, or we're hoping you play 9, or prove to us you should play 9. All that aside, I don't think that anyone thinks that, you know, it could be really that detrimental to him if he played 9 and was completely out of place. Yeah, we all agree with that. But is it the best thing for the team? Listen, this is an organization where we would all like to believe that from now moving forward, it's always earned, never given. And, you know, in the Flames organization, I think for many years, you know, by virtue of the contract you had, you were guaranteed a spot in the lineup for the most part. Now it's like, hey, best young man is getting shots at the big leagues, best young player. It might not be him. It might be, one of the other prospects that they have, not someone else they drafted this year, but one of the other young guys who's been toiling away in the AHL, maybe Solovyov. I know they're different players, but I'm just saying, to me, it shouldn't just be, hey, I think their mindset will largely be, hey, unless you prove otherwise, yes, we want to see you at that level, and we think you deserve to be at that level. So we'll see how camp goes, and we'll see how the exhibition season goes. I will say one thing. Be pretty surprised if he didn't dress in pretty much all of the preseason games.
Yeah. It feels like, and I go back to, I said this earlier this week, I go back to something Dave Dickinson said with Rob Kerr and I, like, I want to say like 8 years ago. And he came on with Rob and I, and we were talking about the Stamps and for, I don't remember what the line of questioning was that got here, but basically what Dave Dickinson said was, you know, pro sports is fair, but it's not always equal. And, you know, for, as I said, 99% of prospects, I wouldn't even think about going about my business that way, where you're like, yeah, we really want you to get the 9 games and you got to play yourself out of it. Like, but for a player of this caliber who has the potential to be that important to your organization down the road, I'm sorry, 99% of other prospects, but this guy's going to get more opportunity than perhaps you will. And I like that. That's what keeps ringing in my head. And like, we're talking about a guy that draft experts, not Pat and Eric or not people on the outside who don't watch as much as these draft experts do. Draft experts, prospects experts are comparing him to friggin' Erik Karlsson. And like to me, that's a friend. Like Erik Karlsson is a future Hall of Famer and a generational defenseman, and at least generational offensive defenseman. I don't want to get into the argument about Karlsson, but like what Karlsson has done in this league is unlike any other player has done in this generation. And you've got a guy in your organization who's now being compared to him. So like, treat him like that, and not entitled, but his development path can be different than everybody else's development path, and there's nothing wrong with that, is I guess the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, and you want him to be hungry, though, too. Like, I mean, again, I think if he comes into camp and you say to him, look, you're going to be here for the first 9 games of the season, no matter how this goes, I think that's the wrong way to do it.
Yes, I agree. I agree. You don't tell him that, but maybe behind closed doors, that might be your thinking.
I think so. I think you're thinking, like, we're all curious, and you know, front office, media, we all are curious to see how he's going to fit in. He's going to be curious to see how he fits in. Everybody wants that to be the outcome following training camp. The question is, you know, is he proven enough to belong there? Because I also think, you know, this is one thing we haven't really talked about, but it does set a bad message if you just hand him an opening night spot. He hasn't had a great preseason. He's -6 in the preseason. Yeah, he's got a couple points, but he's not exactly fitting in like we had hoped. But we're still going to start the season with him. We're going to give him his 9 games ahead of other defensemen who are really doing well in the preseason, right? I mean, that does send a bad message when it's like, oh, okay, so we get it. Because he was ninth pick overall. The rest of us can have a great camp. Doesn't matter. This is the chosen one, and he's going to get everything ahead of us. And you're right. Like Dickens has said, life's not fair, or however he put it there. It's not always fair, but that's the way it is. I mean, he is going to get preferential treatment, but don't shun somebody else who's having a brilliant camp. Wouldn't we all love that as observers, for there to be that guy who steps in like nobody, again, we've talked about it a million times, but Martin Pospisil, who had their hand up and said he was the next call-up?
Yeah.
You know, who thought, I mean, Zeri, to a degree, we all thought he might be the first call-up or one of the first calls, but Pospisil, no. Look, if another guy, and there's a ton of talented young defensemen in the organization, has a great camp, you know, I think it'd be foolish to give Parikh the season start as compared to, you know, some guy who's, like, played better than him in preseason.
Agreed. It's just such a fascinating conversation and speaks to what this guy could be. I'm really excited for what the young man might be. Like I remember you've talked to him. I sat there on the draft floor with him on Friday in Vegas, and at one point he said to me, I was like, hey, what do you need to work on? First of all, I think he was conducting the interview, not me, which like he kept on throwing questions back at me. I was like, man, like you've got a future in this business whenever your playing career is done. But one of the things he said is, yeah, I know I need to get better defensively, and like there's things I got to work on, but like you're not drafting me just to defend. Like you're drafting me for offense. You're drafting me because of things I can do with the puck. And I was like, holy, that is honesty, and that is like that's a guy who knows what he's good at, and there's something to be said about that type of confidence and that type of self-awareness. I just think they got a really special potential talent here, and I really hope it pans out the way that it could pan out. And I guess this conversation just speaks to the buzz that I feel about a player that I haven't felt since Matthew Tkachuk. And I remember feeling the same way and having similar conversations 8 years ago at this time about Matthew Tkachuk said, I'm coming to camp. I'm playing in the NHL. That's how I'm thinking about it. I know that might not be the case, but I'm playing in the NHL. And, you know, Matthew had this similar type of swagger, right? Like, Matthew is very sure of himself as a player and very sure of what his strengths are and knew exactly what he was as a hockey player. And lo and behold, he's never played a single minute in any other league than the NHL since he was drafted. And so I get the same type of buzz now about Zane than I did then about Matthew. And I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah. And listen, it's hard to remember where everybody's mindset was when Tkachuk was drafted, but by virtue of the name, by virtue of the fact that he had just scored the the overtime winner in the Memorial Cup, like by virtue of all he had done, I do think that if we were being honest and reflecting on how we felt at the same time 8 years ago when Tkachuk was drafted, I wouldn't have said, well, 95% of the chance that Matthew Tkachuk doesn't start the season with the Flames. Like, I think that most people thought there was a damn good chance he was going to start in the National Hockey League, right? It's different because of the position. Is that the reason why it's different? Because another thing that nobody brings up here, and I've started to ask scouts about it and stuff, like, are we concerned or should there be any sort of concern about the size of Zane Parekh? Like, because you can be a diminutive, you don't have to be a huge forward to be successful in the National Hockey League. It helps. But I think you need a certain size to be a defenseman in the NHL, even if you're not going to be a physical player at all. Is that at all a concern? Have you heard that from anybody?
Yeah, for sure. Because he is listed at 6 feet and just under 180 pounds. I don't, like, he's 18, so there might be a little bit more just natural growth there. But I don't know if we're going to be talking about him ever being a hulking defenseman, right? So 6 feet, 180. What do you think Erik Karlsson's measurements are?
Yeah, like similar. Like
6 feet, 190.
Yeah, and you know, when he was 18, he was probably 180 as well, or 175. So I'm not saying I use the word diminutive. I didn't really mean that about him. But generally speaking,
compared to other defensemen, for sure,
that's the low end for a defenseman. But again, he brings such a different skill set, to the fore. And we're not worried about him banging and crashing. I mean, that's part of the game. And you got to always worry about that to a degree. But anyway, nobody's sitting here saying he should make the play or make the team the first year. But with Tkachuk, a lot of people did. And the comparisons are fair in every other aspect because the Calgary Flames haven't had a top 10 draft pick since Tkachuk, right?
Also, I mean, true.
The first time. Yeah. So, I mean, it just goes with it that in a strong draft year, that the comparisons would be similar in that, boy, this is a guy we can build around moving forward. Now, another thing is you don't want to burn the whole first year of his contract this first year anyway. And again, we both agree that there's no way this kid gets more than 9 games in the National Hockey League. But then again, like, would that be something that would be a tough decision for the organization, wouldn't it? If he played those 9 games, and I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but if he plays those 9 games and puts up 9 points, that's a tough decision, right? Because he also has an organization looking big picture and the fact that you don't really think your team's going to be competitive for 3 or 4 or 5 years. Do you want to burn that first year of his contract that way? Or is it like, hey, it doesn't matter. If he's that good, he needs to be playing at this level to challenge him to the highest degree, and we got to keep him even though we could theoretically lose him a year earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really interested to see how this plays itself out and whether or not this is something that maybe we're talking about again in September, October. And you know what, Erik? It could very well be that we get to training camp and this just is like, no. Great idea, but nah, he's not ready. And if that's the case, that's the case. But
no one's worried about that.
Yeah. And if it happens, oh well. Here's the other example I'll give. You think it hurt Evan Bouchard in Edmonton, where he got 7 NHL games in his D+1 year, if you want to call it that? Like he got drafted in 2018 and he played 7 games that spring before going back to the London Knights and having another really good season. And Evan Bouchard looks like his development's okay. It took a little while for him to get to the point where the Oilers felt okay playing him on their top pairing, but are the Oilers in game 7 of the Cup final if not for Evan Bouchard? Of course they're not. And Bouchard's 24 years old right now, so it took a little while for him to get there, and it started with him in the NHL. Bouchard is a really interesting comparable to Parekh because there were questions about Bouchard skating, questions about Bouchard's defense, and there still are, but he's turned into a hell of a hockey player and a guy who's going to get absolutely paid in free agency or on his next contract. Again, there's another really good example of maybe where the Flames could go with a guy like Parekh.
Yeah, like, well, for sure, they're interesting comparisons. And the projection and the hope for a lot of Flames personnel and fans is that he will project as a superstar like Evan Bouchard evolved into this year. Yeah, different players and everything, but I don't think the shot that Parikh has is it's not the Bouch bomb that Bouchard has, but we'll find out more about that. Let me throw this at you, and maybe this is something we think about over the break here.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see, like, Parikh's camp will be, that'll be the number one story going into camp. You know, Dustin Wolf's workload will be another heavy question going into camp, but we won't have answers, you know, until basically the season's over on that. But can you think of something like what's number two, three, or four on the list in terms of storylines? Because when the Flames went out and signed, you know, Anthony Mantha, you know, that immediately ate up a roster spot for, you know, potentially a youngster to come in and climb in there and make a difference. You know, Coronado, is he number two or three on the list? Like, does he start the season with the team? Does he have a great camp? How does he look? You know what I mean? Like, and maybe, again, maybe we just take 5 minutes during the break to jot down our top five list of what you think the biggest five storylines are going into camp. Because Parikh will steal the headlines.
Yeah.
Will be the number one story. But I haven't really thought too much. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. What comes, you know, what also is there? I mean, obviously, we want to see all the prospects and how they fit in. And we also want to see how all the AHLers, you know, are they ready to step up? But I don't know. I don't know if that's an easy thing to kind of jot down and think about.
Well, I've got one that we can that I'll bounce off at you after we pause. Let's do that for sure.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's do that. It's the Eric Francis Hour. We're underway on this Friday. Eric Francis, Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Pat Steinberg along with you. Eric Francis Hour is part of Flames Talk, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Standardbred Racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Final EF hour as part of Flames Talk for a while. EF, of course, Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joining us this hour on the program. Well, let's just before we hit the pause, Eric, you asked a question. Why don't you re-up? We were talking about Zane Parikh for the first half of this hour, and Eric, I think you quite accurately said that Zane Parikh and his camp likely going to be the biggest story at training camp and of the spring, or sorry, of the fall. What was your question after that? And let's jump in on that.
Well, the question basically is, you know, what is the story? What is the second or third ranked story going into camp? Not the question going into the season so much as what are we going to start learning once we get into camp? Because again, the goaltending situation, you know, we may hear some interesting things from the coaching staff in terms of what they're planning to do in terms of workload for Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar, but we won't know until the season's over how they actually plan to employ those guys or how it actually shakes out.
Mm-hmm.
What are the storylines moving in? Because I think that there are some interesting ones, but they'll all be covered over by the Parikh story. But what's second or third?
The first one that comes to my mind is, and it's funny, it's been one of the storylines the last couple of years. It involves Jonathan Huberdeau, but now, okay, so Craig Conroy told us, I think he first mentioned this at some point with you while the season was still going on about wanting to find some help for Jonathan Huberdeau, and then definitely told it to everybody on locker cleanout day. He said, yeah, one of the things I want to do, without even being prompted on that one, he said, one of the things I want to do is give Jonathan a little bit more help in year three as a member of the Flames. And then in free agency, they signed a guy by the name of Anthony Mantha, who you brought up a little earlier, and we know one of the reasons why he was targeted by the team. I think there's a lot of different reasons or things that go into the Mantha signing, but one of them, without question, is they feel like there's a potential for his skill set and the things that he does to translate nicely onto a line with Jonathan Huberdeau. And so what Jonathan's opening night line looks like and who he's playing with and how that develops, as much as I think a lot of Flames fans are kind of worn out on the Jonathan Huberdeau discussion, I still think that is one of the big stories.
Yeah, I don't. I think people in our city have resigned themselves to the fact that he's probably going to be a 50, 60, 70-point guy. And I know everyone's hoping that that's not true, but it's an interesting discussion. And, it surprised me you'd say that. By virtue of the fact that he's the highest-paid guy and there's so much controversy around him and around the league, everyone knows the situation with him. It makes sense that would be one of the top storylines. But I think that because the mindset of the fan and the media has shifted so much to now, how are the prospects developing and who's going to start moving in? I think people are done with thinking about how is the team going to look this year? How are they going to do this year? Not how they look. That's very interesting. But like I would counter by saying I think like the line combinations, and that's what you're talking about, like who we're going to be playing with, that's going to be a daily thing. We're going to be fascinated every single line combination they put out there. And you're the king of tweeting it out every day, and so I will defer to you on that every day because we love that, right? I mean, everyone loves that conversation. But to me, Coronado is right near the top of that list because it's just the nature of the sporting world. You know, he was all the story last year. Everybody was so excited. And we saw that shot in preseason. We thought, I remember doing an interview somewhere, and I said, this guy's easily a 20-goal scorer in his rookie year. I really thought that. And then it was clear he couldn't really find his way, and they decided to move him down. But, Coronado, Hanzek, these are guys that nobody talks about anymore. It's because they're old news. There's new, fresh new blood that was drafted in the first round this year. Everybody wants to see and talk about. But those guys are 1 year into their development as pros. Hanzek's not a pro, but you know what I mean?
Yep.
You want to see where they are at. People forget about them. To me, that would be a mistake to not keep a very close eye on how those guys have progressed or not. And I think that'll be a huge story. Another one to me is who's playing up the middle. To me, that's right up near the top of the most fascinating stories. Like, are they? I know they're going to try Pospisil up the middle in preseason. I know they are very interested in having Connor Zeri play up the middle at some point, if not from the start of the season. Do they want to veer away from Sharon Govich being up the middle? My guess is yes. They would rather him not be up the middle and have those defensive responsibilities. So those are all some of the other things that I think are a little more foremost in people's minds than Huberdeau, because I really think people feel like it's a lost cause. I hate to say that. I really hate to say it, but I think that that's the way most people think.
Do you think it's a lost cause?
I have seen nothing from him to make me think that he's anything capable of being anything more than, say, an 80-point guy.
At this point, you'd be elated, ecstatic at 80 points.
100%. Listen, who was the best skater the Flames had this year? I mean, I guess you could argue because Coleman had a hell of a season too, but Nazem Kadri is generally accepted as the guy who had
for sure
the best season as a skater, and he wasn't even a point a game, and people thought he had a hell of a season. If you could get a point a game for Jonathan Huberdeau again, I think that's about the most you could expect from him. Now, listen, years ago, you recall, we laugh about this all the time. I there was a clip I said somewhere on a radio or TV that Johnny Gaudreau will never get 99 points again. And boy, did he make those words.
I mean, he didn't finish with 99 points.
No, he had way more. Yeah, exactly. See, that's my thank you for that was my point. He'll never be at 99 again. He'll get way more, is what I was saying. But again, the previous year or two before that, we'd seen nothing to suggest that Johnny Gaudreau was going to be capable of, putting up 100-plus season, right? And anyway, not to defend myself, but I was wrong on that. So I don't want to sit here and put huge parameters on what I think he's capable of is, but all I really want to say is, like, I watch him on a nightly basis, and I think he's a great guy. I think his personality he's had an incredible approach to, obviously, two really tough years in his life, his career, his life, but I haven't seen, I shudder to think that this guy got 115 points in National Hockey League. I don't see any semblance of that whatsoever. And again, I hope he proves me wrong. But boy, I mean, you tell me, were there even nights where you're like, ah, there's the guy who had 115 points? Like, never. Not as a Flame. Not once. Sure, he had a couple good games here and there. Put up a couple points some nights, 3 points, but not the dominating side of player you have to be to get 115 in this league.
No, I didn't see. I mean, early on, I definitely saw some positives from him, but no, nothing that would speak towards that, Eric. That is, I can't sit here and tell you that I saw much of that. We'll see what this offseason brings. It's funny.
Yep.
So the other ones that you talked about were Coronado and who plays center. Which do you want to dive into here in the final 10 minutes or so first?
Oh, well, I don't know. Whichever one you think is more interesting. I mean, I think the center is going to be so interesting because, you know, we never saw Pospisil play center. Yeah, he took some draws and such every once in a while. But,
yeah,
you know, it's something that this organization's really intrigued about. I don't like it. I want him up and down the wings banging and crashing. And I don't want him worrying about his own zone as much as he's worrying about getting into the other zone first and causing havoc.
Yeah.
So to me, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it doesn't. And it could be a moot point if, and sure, they're going to try Bosphorus up the middle, but it could be a moot point if Connor Zary has a really good camp at the middle and continues to show signs that he's a legitimate center in the National Hockey League. Then you've ended that discussion to me, but you tell me where you stand on it.
I'm of your mind. Like, I have no problem with them trying Pospisil, and I have no problem with them giving that some even significant looks in training camp in the preseason. But my feel is both Pospisil and Sharon Govich are better suited and help your team more on the flank as opposed to down the middle. I think Sharon Govich is a great player. I thought that contract extension was an absolute home run, but I don't see him as a center. I thought that he struggled mightily down the middle in his extended run this year. I thought that he struggled defensively. I thought that the defensive responsibilities that he undertook and took seriously really took away from the offense that he could provide you off the wing and how dangerous he was. It wasn't a fit. I did not think there was much there to show me that this is the position that he belongs in. You know, Zary was a very small sample size, but in 6 games, I thought that we saw some positives, so I'd be interested in seeing that. But going back to Pospisil, I haven't seen it at center, so I don't know, but it feels like exactly what you talked about, his ability to bring speed off the wing and get in there first and really start to open up room and get the team on the cycle and start to create down low, all those types of things. I think that translates way better with Pospisil on the wing playing with a driver like Kadri. Like, for me, one of the things I have written down in pencil is Kadri, Kuzmenko, and Pospisil to start the season. Why wouldn't you go back to that with how good they were and how well they seemed to work together in the back part of the season? And a big part of that, to your point, Eric, was Pospisil on the wing.
Mm-hmm. I want him to be the first one in the zone every single time. If you're a center, you're never the first guy in the zone, right? So I feel quite strongly that I don't think it's a good idea. Now, that said, you want some big, strong centers, and Pospisil's a little bit bigger than Connor Zary. And, you know, but he's not huge. It's just he plays like a big man. I don't agree with you when you say, like, Sharon Govich struggled. Like, I do think at first he struggled, like, first, whatever, 10, 12, 15 games up the middle. When he was put in there after Lindholm was traded, I mean, it was a tough position to put him in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it took him time, but I do think that down the stretch, the last, 30 games or whatever, I thought he was just fine as a center. I thought he was still really good.
Yeah, I thought like they continued to have to keep him away from tough situations. I thought he spent way too much in his own end. He was awful in the dot. That line did nothing for me with him down the middle. That's just me. And you know how I, you know, nerd boy over here. I'm not wearing my glasses right now, but nerd boy over here with his dorky analytic numbers. A lot of those did not paint Sharon Govich as a center very. And you know what? maybe it's better they give it another go. Maybe that time that he spent at center helps him be much better at it if they try it again this year. I came away quite convinced from this past season that he's more effective on the wing. And I'm always open to be wrong. I'm wrong more often than right, so I'll be the first to tell you if I'm wrong. But it feels like he is more dangerous, more effective, helps you more when he's able to come at you off the half boards and really have a little bit more freedom to get that shot away and all that type of stuff.
No, I can confirm you're correct in that he's better on the wing. Like I want, I'd said that from the outside. All I'm saying is I don't agree that he struggled. I think that he got more comfortable with it. I thought he was okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw the faceoff numbers too. I've always thought faceoff numbers are one of the most overrated stats in sport. It's still basically a coin flip every time they get into the dot. So what's the big deal if it's 5% one way or the other? But we can have that debate on another day. But I don't like arguing with you
if I'm being perfectly honest. No, it hurts my heart.
That's it. Stampede, everybody. You know what I always say about Stampede? Doing three decades of Stampedes, I've never seen a fight in Stampede. I think that is amazing. I'm not saying they haven't happened. You've probably seen many of them. You probably started many of them. I know you have.
Well, I'm a big brawler, as you know.
Yeah. Everyone knows that. But I just, that's the one thing I always tell people. Like, it's, you know, the whole city's out there imbibing, and yet I've never seen a fight. Again, I'm sure maybe I'm not going to the right places. Or maybe I am going to the right places where I never see fights. Anyway, that's just an aside. The centerman on this team should not be Sharangovich and should not be Postecoglou. But I'm okay with them experimenting with them throughout camp and even into the season. Listen, the next 3 to 4 years are experiments to me. Like, you know, this is not about win now. This is not about, geez, they better get off to a good start because they got a tough schedule right off the outset. That mindset that we've had in this city forever is gone, and it's gone for a while. So I'm okay experimenting as long as you want. If you see positive signs, keep exploring. But I, from what I saw last year of Sharangovich, agreed. I didn't think he struggled, but I didn't think that was the most effective place for him at all. And the stats back that up significantly.
The other interesting thing that it kind of plays into it, you know, the other thing that you're interested in and I think is fair is Coronado and where he fits. And to a lesser extent, I'd add Pelche into that mix as well right now by signing Mantha and Lomberg. I don't know where those guys fit. I don't know where their natural place is in the lineup. I'm confident that if they prove that they deserve a regular spot in the lineup, Ryan Huska, Craig Conroy will make it happen. Like if Matt Coronado is one of the 9 best forwards in training camp and through the preseason, and they believe he's one of the 9 best forwards to start the season, they'll have him in as one of the top 9. Doesn't matter what the contracts or the depth charts or whatever, those types of things say. And the same is true with Pelche. I feel like I've got a better read on what I feel Coronado's going to be than Pelche. I'm super uncertain on what Pelche is in the NHL. I don't know. I still think there's a lot of potential for him to be in this league. I still think that he's a nice prospect in the organization, but I don't think the Flames know what they have at this point in Pelche because it's been such a weird last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been pretty rocky road for him for sure. And I know that I do feel like he's one of the most popular players, not just in the room, but in the city. And everybody's cheering for him. But I agree with you. You know, like he hasn't had a chance to really show too much. So people will want to see everything that he's capable of doing. And I'm not sure what that is, what sort of role that is. But so there you go. Like there's an example. Pelche, Coronado, and to a lesser degree, Hanzek. These are all first-round draft picks that, they're not as highly touted as they were when they were first drafted. I guess I could put it that way. Obviously, these things take time, but with every year that passes and they don't make their mark, you just wonder. You're curious as to where they're at. And yep. Listen, I'm not suggesting in any of those three cases that the ship has sailed or that they're not capable of living up to first round status. Not at all. I'm just saying with every passing year, people focus on them less and less, and the onus is on them more and more to prove that they deserve a spot. So I obviously don't think Hanzek will, you know, be in the picture this year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Pelche and Coronado, absolutely. I think it would be considered quite a failure if either one of them didn't start the season on the roster. Yeah. Like I that would be quite surprising to me.
I mean, we're still a ways away from training camp, but boy, there's going to be a lot of interesting things that we're kicking around. Look, you and I aren't talking on this program for the next little while, so fair game to go into all of it, because I think that now, with the excitement that has surrounded the draft, with the excitement and the intrigue that Craig Conroy has created by the direction that he has put this team on, I think everybody is now just like, let's get to September. Let's see what this thing is all about. Let's see if this is going to start giving us being, you know, on the outside. Is this going to be the year that we really start to get some promising signs? Even if they miss the playoffs by 35 points, will we come out of the coming season saying, hey, there were some really promising things that, as Craig Conroy has said to both you and I, in a 3 to 5 year plan, do you start getting the inklings of the groundwork of that 3 to 5 year plan this year? I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, just because the expectations are low, and they should be in terms of, you know, where this team's going to finish this year. I'm really happy that doesn't mean that there's no intrigue or excitement or anything like that. Like, talking to people all through Stampede, like, there's a lot of excitement and interest in this team moving forward. No, nobody's thinking, oh, geez, can they really make the playoffs? Can they do any damage? You know, what's the Battle of Alberta look like? It's a totally different mindset, but there's still a lot of intrigue, and that's great, because, you know, I think in some cities there isn't. I think some cities people are like, yeah, you know what? Organization's going to do a rebuild. They're dead to me until they figure this out. And that's not the case in Calgary, I don't believe.
Good stuff, buddy. It has been awesome doing the Eric Francis Hour every week over the last, 10 months we've been doing this. It's been a lot of fun, my friend, and another great year. This is the first year that we've done the Eric Francis Hour as part of Flames Talk, and I've loved it, man. It's been just an unbelievable addition to our week on Flames Talk, so thanks for being a part of it all this year. Have a I know we'll talk and I'll see you, but have a great rest of your summer, hey?
Yeah, you too, buddy. I concur. I'm so glad we switched the format. I knew that we would have a great time together every Friday that we've done this for, the last however many years. It's always been my favorite chat of the week, and to expand it for a full hour has been a lot of fun. So thanks for doing that, and thanks for carrying the ball on it, and have yourself a great summer, my man.
Talk soon, hey. Be well.
Okay. Cheers, buddy.
Eric Francis wraps up the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday, and that wraps us up this hour. Thanks to Azam, thanks to Shan, thanks to Leo, keeping us on the rails this hour. And this hour has been the Eric Francis Hour, which is brought to you, as always, by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta. Live standardbred racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.